Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Rob Carey, Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Department of the Navy. Also joining us in our conversation is Bob Reeve, partner in IBM's DoD practice. Rob, we all know that technology has not only enhanced our ability to share information, but it's also made organizations more vulnerable to unlawful and destructive penetration, and you referenced this in the first segment. So having said this, information access and knowledge sharing is obviously key to your operations, but there's a delicate balance that needs to be struck there. Could you elaborate a bit more on your chief IT security initiatives and your efforts in balancing this delicate issue of access and security?
Sure, Al. We have worked very hard, and my former boss, Dave Winogrand, who's up at OSD now, has mentioned to me, we're not really balancing so much as we are working both delivering access with security. So the balancing act almost seems like you're willing to compromise one for the other. And we really, it's sort of like you have to have your cake and eat it too. You have to have information access and you have to have the appropriate level of security. So that unto itself becomes a challenge because people are generally willing to swing the pendulum into the security space and lock a network down, or on the other hand, the internet itself is inherently wide open, and there's a balance or a compromise that we have to make that allows both to succeed. So as we deploy things like the Common Access Card and public key infrastructure, the logon component, accessing the network and authentication and verifying identities becomes the first thing that we've pretty well succeeded at. And then as we move into attribute-based access controls, which is more of an identity management-based process that allows us to move into the place where data is tagged, and if I have the right access controls, I can get to it. We're starting that adventure now, and there's a lot that will be rolled into that, PKI and biometrics, smart cards, things like that. But we have to get to the place where we can ensure that Rob Carey's allowed to access the information Rob Carey's allowed to access and not the information he's not. And it plays out on things like in the classified networks that we have. We have to make sure that we can control things adequately, yet make sure that information is able to be shared. We want to get rid of usernames and passwords. Again, back to the logon thing. So much of what we do is in the security realm is fairly simple and straightforward. It is not difficult to have people log on with their Common Access Card, but it is once again a change in how they do business. We have extended public key infrastructure to our BlackBerries. So we have smart card readers that are Bluetooth enabled that allow my credentials from my Common Access Card to be transmitted through Bluetooth to the BlackBerry, and I can sign and encrypt emails from that wireless device. That's a huge step forward as we try to lock down. Did that email come from somebody that I thought it was? Was it Bob Reeve or was it signed by Bob Reeve? I need to know that in the future because the threat can do things with emails that heretofore we need to be aware of. We have invested a fair amount of resources in raising the security bar of the NMCI and the other networks because we have come to the realization. Secretary Winter has come to the realization, or he's known this, that security is not something we debate. Security is part of the basic system, and so he has helped bolster something that, say, 4 or 5 years ago, we would debate, and that's not debatable now. It is make sure we're investing in the right sets of tools and activities that, again, balance access and security or allow us to have both.
Taking the same issue but from a people perspective, what steps are you taking to create or cultivate a culture of accountability for the protection of sensitive personal information to ensure that you're continuing improvements in this area and addressing any security weaknesses?
Last year, we embarked upon a journey to strengthen our management of PII, privacy information. We developed some processes of how you handle it and deploy those. We took those who engage PII and put them through additional training. So we're working our way to a place called accountability, that now we manage that information as if it was something that there would be a consequence if it was not handled appropriately. That's an important distinction because classified information, if you're in the military and you mishandle it, you will be held accountable. Whether it's on a fitness report or a civilian evaluation, there is a consequence that will be brought to bear. In the PII world, that's a more difficult challenge right now. If it's malicious, obviously we can, but we have to get in and understand our handling procedures and create a sense of accountability and ownership of those folks who manage Privacy Act information such that they will manage it in a more coordinated and consistent manner. If a laptop is stolen out of someone's car that's in the trunk that you would have put it there anyway, it seems to me that that's an issue that you are remorseful about, but you would have not known someone was going to break into your car. Leaving a laptop on the front seat of a car in plain view is sort of in the wrong part of the neighborhood, for example, is sort of something that you have to be aware that you could have done that better. You could have put it in the trunk. You could have done other things. We have a lot of issues with the prolific amount of information that we have, whether it's on thumb drives, whether it's on PDAs, whether it's even sometimes just paper. So we're trying to wrap all these information flows into a consistent procedure and then make sure that whether you're a civilian, a uniform member, or a contractor, that there's an accountability delivered and that there will be a consequence on the other end if you do not handle this stuff properly.
You mentioned some of the downside of social networking, but there's a lot of press about those models and technologies that are redefining the relationships of citizens with their government. And I understand that you may, in fact, have the honor of being the first federal agency CIO to have his own public blog, recently recognized by Federal Computer Week. To that end, what are some of the more important business potential applications that you've identified within the Department of Navy? And more importantly, what does this mean for federal government as it pursues the possibilities of Web 2.0?
Bob, the Web 2.0 technologies present great opportunities to accelerate the delivery of information to whether it's the taxpayers and delivering citizen services for the agencies and departments that are in the district here, as well as the Department of Defense to deliver value to warfighters. They are stretching how we move information around, how we integrate information in real time, our very basic tenets of net centricity, using the net to convey information and move information and integrate information to present a picture that a decision maker will use. Web 2.0 can only make that better and does make it better. For example, when we write policy, one of my main tenets, policies can take months and months and months to be deployed because there's a draft created, then it's routed around, and it's we incorporate comments, it's routed around again. Wiki technology allows me, and I intend to do this, to deploy and develop a policy on a wiki. It'll be a closed wiki because I can't have the public making policy, but I can have Department of Navy employees latched onto a wiki using that technology to, in essence, put their money where their mouth is and write it like you want to see it. Now, I can do that in a matter of, my sense is, 30, 60 days. Focus your energy. Write the words you want to see there. This isn't about routing it around ad infinitum. This is get it to the place where the draft takes a very short amount of time to get very close to being the final version, and that technology lets me do it. Not to mention I can track all the changes. I understand who said what, when they said it, who overwrote somebody else's words, and I can then create what I believe is a consensus-based, team-built document that the organizations will all sign up to. Things like RSS feeds and mashups, again, allow us to use and integrate information far faster than we would have, enabling people even on the battlefield to make decisions. Where you see a lot of Google Maps and you'll see a little arrow, a pin dot into the map, so you now you have a location, you hit the dot and you will see an address and a phone number. Those types of technologies seem very simple but are very powerful in our utilization of them.
When you talk about all of those different components, the knowledge management capabilities of the organization to intersect people, technology, and processes to enable informed decision-making and help you accomplish your mission. You talked a little bit about that. Could you expand on where there are some other recent examples of your use of knowledge management in the Department of Navy?
Bob, we have had great success in our diligence with knowledge management and its importance to our very basic operations. We have been pursuing knowledge management tenets in the Department of CIO's office ever since I got there. So that 8 years now, we have been working towards creating an environment and creating people that understand that information in context is far more powerful than data to help decision makers or to conduct transactions in the business of the department. Today, there are knowledge management officers in battle groups. There are knowledge management officers on most of the fleet staffs. 4 years ago, that did not exist, but they have that very title. That's their full-time job. They are responsible for how are we collaborating, how are we exchanging information, what are the standards, how do certain systems need to interface that maybe didn't today. So it's really exciting for us to watch the fruits of our labors over time now become courses that are taught to larger and larger audiences about, you know, how do I capture knowledge? How do I use information systems to deliver business value? We have moved into and maybe back to the future, the information management space. Who needs what information when? And how do I integrate things like content management or search, right? Because at the end of the day, knowledge management is about attaching information to a context. And then I have to be able to search information and then make some decisions. So as we work those various aspects of KM and knowledge management, we have struck upon what we think is a real way ahead for our tool sets to really shorten the cycle time between someone's idea in his head at a very basic level and a action on the other end that has information behind it.
Talking about change in people with the rise of the so-called net generation, could you elaborate on your department's efforts to meet the challenges this new generation brings? Specifically, how are you leveraging the capabilities and the expectations of this generation and integrating them with the established culture of senior leadership that didn't grow up in such a digital environment?
Bob, a great question. Today's senior leaders in all of DOD, but certainly in the Department of Navy, like me, I'm the average age of an IT worker. I'm 47. I have been working in IT approximately 8 years, although the average IT worker has been working 16 years in the business. So right away you think, okay, I am a boomer, and I am two generations away from the folks we're recruiting and trying to attract and retain. I am a digital immigrant. I have moved into this space. Being an engineer by training, I sort of understand it and consider myself dangerous. But when I sit in front of my daughter or my son who's 10 and they offer me PowerPoint advice, I feel very humbled because they have been working in this environment since they touched computers, which was in preschool. You and I didn't touch a computer in preschool. We probably touched it in college and then thought it was a little bit different, the gray screen or the green screens. So as we try to take advantage of this talent base that exists out there, this unharnessed talent base, as we move into the next generation network environment, we have to understand the strengths and skills that these younger people bring make us a little nervous. The decision makers are a little nervous, okay, because we don't know how to do what they've done ever since they were born. They don't know not having a cell phone. They never heard of an LP, a vinyl record. They don't never heard of a cassette tape or an 8-track, right? They only know CDs. And so these digital natives make us a little bit nervous, but they are our future. And so, you know, we work on and we are working on creating an intern program for people in the department to bring them aboard, appropriately pay and retain and train them to continue to be to serve the department as civilians or in the uniform military as sailors or young officers. They understand wikis and blogs. They understand the new technologies. They expect that, which is something, again, that the older leadership has to grapple with because I understand these things because I work in it. But I would tell you, peers of mine would look at this and they would not understand necessarily. So it is an important thing for us to focus on this next generation and make sure that they are following behind us and able to deliver value to the department.
So along that vein, can you tell us a little bit about the Information Technology Exchange Program, or ITEP? Because I understand that this is geared towards this issue of attracting and retaining some of these new generations of IT people.
It is. While the ITEP legislation did expire, we are working the path to the future for that particular program. We like the fact that we can leverage industry best practices and bring them into supporting our missions and vice versa. So I think there's opportunities there. And again, industry hires young people all the time. We hire young people when we recruit sailors and Marines that go to boot camp. They're by definition mostly pretty young. In the civilian sector is really where that gap is in my mind because, for example, I spoke out at a conference in San Diego last fall and I asked people, all the millennials in the audience, please raise your hand. It's about 800 people in the audience and I got less than 10 hands, which was very telling to me that they are not associated with us and we need to work that. So the ITEP program creates another venue, right, to leverage that talent.
Great. What does the future hold for the U.S. Department of the Navy's IT function? We will ask Robert Carey, Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Department of the Navy, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.